animali.
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line Podcast. This is your hostess, Kat. Today we have Eric back.
Hey.
And Carl.
What's happening, Kat?
Oh, I am awesome. And I think you are too, Kat. Okay, let me stop. Anyway, today we're going to talk about Fringe and possibly some Doctor Who and whatever else. We don't know. About the Fringe finale, because early, I mean, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, Eric gave a prediction about how he felt the Fringe show was going to, you know, go. And when I saw the direction that Fringe took and Peter and what he did and all, you know, these other things, I was just really surprised that he was so dead on with that.
Much respect to the Eric. I spoiler Eric for Fringe last season.
It did feel like a spoiler. I was like, oh, that happened. Wow.
Because I was right there. I was right there with you when you were saying that. I was like, man, that does sound good. I hope it does go that way. And just lockstep, we got parallel universe Walter kicking in. We got other, you know, the stolen Peter. It just one
Peter
thing after another.
Peter was angry about it. He didn't understand. He left to the other. Eric,
he joined up with his real biological father. They brought Olivia and Peter very close together. They even got them to the point of kissing and then thrust them apart as far as they possibly could.
Oh, we knew that was coming, though. Yeah, that was good.
Like, what? How was it so predictable? Because I didn't see it until you said it, and then I couldn't unsee it. So
it's, like I said, it all started, I was trying to, you know, nail it down. I think it's, wow, it was episode 5 of season 2. That's where I got the clue that set me off. And that was the episode about dreams. It was so long ago. I'm trying to see. This aired October 15th of last year.
Wow.
This episode. And they just had this little 5-second tease at the very end of the episode where Peter woke up from a nightmare. And all they showed was he just saw like Walter's face. And that was it. And he woke up from a night. He was a child in his dream. And that was it. That's all I needed, because and then it all just made sense to me from there. Because we already knew that he had a dubious past and from season 1.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw that. And I knew right away what that meant. Like, seeing Bishop like that. Or his father, I mean. And I knew right away he was kidnapped from the other world. And that, I mean, because, again, it's I was, you know, raised in the University of Sci-Fi, and if you're going to have alternate universes, we all saw Spock with the goatee, and,
right.
You know, you've been trained to understand these things, and if you're going to have an alternate world, we've seen the Mirror Mirrorverse throughout the half a century of Star Trek,
mm-hmm.
And you know what's
as well as comic books as well,
Absolutely, yes, and so you knew that things are going to be, you know, through the looking glass. And you just, it's kind of, to me, it's like reverse engineering. That's the way I figure out these shows. Like, I know they have to get to this point, you know, given what we know about sci-fi. So then I just work backwards. Well, how are we going to get to that point? Well, we're going to have to need some strife, and there's going to be some, you know, relationship. And then it all works itself out. So, I don't know. It does stink to get it kind of that right, because it takes a lot of the fun out of it, because then I hope there's going to be more surprises that they haven't telegraphed. And of course there's the richness of the details, but there wasn't any other like outstanding surprises. Actually, the only thing but what was still satisfying was just watching the execution. You know, it's one thing to have a brilliant idea. If you've ever seen any campy show,
flash forward
from 20 years on back, They all have brilliant premises, but when you...
Oh, God.
But that doesn't matter. It's all about the execution as to whether it's actually going to work or not. And that was the fun part, was watching it unfold and all the neat little things that they throw in for people like me who like to, you know, because every episode you're looking for the Observer. Every episode,
I stopped looking for him. Is he still popping up like that or
every,
not?
Every single episode since like season one all the way to the present.
Missed him like the whole second season. I didn't even see him.
Yeah, because they weren't making it as obvious, but
he was there.
Yeah, so if you want to play that game, you can play the Observer game. And also, if you're one of those people who wanted to get out your decoder ring, you could decode like every episode's, you know, ENIAC code. If that's your thing, because I don't ever do.
I don't even know what that means.
You're not aware of the code? I mean, because it's old hat now, because everyone kind of figured it out by like sixth episode season one. Every time they go to a commercial break and they show a picture of like a hand or a frog or an apple.
Each one represents
a letter of the alphabet. And every single episode has 5 to 8 of those pictograms. And if you have your little decoder ring out, every episode, it has a word that's a clue that either pertains to the episode you just watched, or it's a single word clue that contributes to the overall story arc of the season.
I don't know what the hell I'm watching, because I did not know that, and they all look the same to me. I mean, the hand looks the same the whole time.
See, I thought that from like episode 2, season 1. I was like, there's a pattern here. This is not.
No, I don't look that hard. Carl, what did you think about the predictions or how everything played out in Fringe?
Well, no, I mean, I liked it. I was with Eric. You know, when he said it, there is a certain consistency or a standard way of constructing a story that when he spelled it out, I said, yep, that'll work. It all made sense to me. Because, I mean, obviously, we knew that there was going to be, I mean, independent of any facts, realities, any hints, that there was going to be a little something between Dunham and what's his name? Peter and Dunham. That was inevitable because you got to have that X-Files kind of will they, won't they thing going to happen. So that was coming clearly. But how it happened, what was going on, again, the details were interesting. When we saw Walter's brain get reassembled.
Oh, man.
And I saw that the dark side of Walter come out and how interesting I thought that character was. Eric's prediction of, you know, evil Walter, I said, that's going to work. That is something that I really want to see. So, again, you know, each of the things that he was talking about, I agree with his description. There is a way to put together a story that is interesting. There's a way that you can you hint about what's coming, a way that you can keep people engaged. And each of the things that he said fell together in a well-constructed story. And so I totally bought it when he said it at the time. and again, you know, I'm not a big fan of spoilers, so I kind of was giving you the elbow on that. But the point is I agree. The execution of it was very well done throughout the season. And as much time as we got to spend in the parallel New York or, you know, whatever, that was fun. The Zeppelin
was beautiful too.
It was absolutely beautiful. The hint when we were looking through the glass, whatever you want to call it.
That screen, or whatever.
Yeah. Just starting with that was so much fun. And you know, we're getting the little glimpses and we're looking at the skyline. You could just pop it up anywhere and see it. And then to finally get to step through and to spend time in that alternate New York was just, it was a lot of fun. It really went well.
So what do you both, you know, either one of you can take this one. What do you think about the alternate universe? I think it's a little edgier. I think it's a little bit more fun. I like seeing the characters, you know, slightly different, but sort of the same. I like seeing the anomaly or the events that happen, like the people that are kind of frozen in time because of the events that happen in our world and things like that. And of course, the Zeppelins, why don't we have those now in mass? I don't know why. But what did y'all think about the alternate world?
Well, it's the post 9/11 world, because I guess that's why it is so edgy, because they've just had disaster after disaster after disaster.
But remember, they still have towers, so technically it's not 9/11.
Yeah, that's true.
It's true. Yeah. But they've had many micro, macro 11s of their own, but multiple. And so that's why their society as a whole is a whole different thing. They're much more police state. it's almost the Secret Service, the FBI or whatever they're called in the alternate world.
Homeland Security, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But they've basically taken over, it seems, as like the strong arm of the government. They're under quasi-martial law. There's a lot of things going on. There's all kinds of quarantine areas throughout the country. If you looked at the map, the whole west coast of California
fell off
the map. Yeah, something happened. Some kind of big something on the San Andreas Fault messed up California. There's a lot of things going on there. So, yes, the people are different. But, and edgier and everything like that. But I really liked... what do they call her? Olivenate? Because there's all these...
They call her Altivia, but yeah, on IMDb, yeah, they call her Bolivia. So I don't...
Yeah, but I loved her. I loved her. I loved her hair. Color. I loved her in her casual clothes. I loved how she just acted more relaxed.
Yeah.
Not so
Wait a minute. Kat, you like the hair.
I love the hair.
No, the hair was wrong, okay?
The hair was awesome. It was red. It had like a blunt cut on the... And it looked edgy. That haircut always works for me. I love
the hair. The hair actually tricked me because in the teaser trailer before we went to the alt world, I was just looking at it real quick and they just showed a lady swishing her head around and I saw her hair flip around and I thought in the teaser trailer that it was going to be Agent Jessup's like valiant return. Oh.
We're dying for Jessup. That's true. I miss her.
I got so excited, and my friend was like, "No, that's not her. It's Olivia."
Okay, look, what I don't get is, I with the parallel universe folks, you had Nick Fury Broyles, which was awesome.
Yeah.
You had like Black Panther Astrid, which I was like, "Oh, she is always hot. She is always hot." You know, you had your suave, debonair, evil Walter, he's awesome. I was like, "Yeah." And then it's like, let's just throw a wig on Dunham. I was like, "Oh, come on. They could at least rock the goatee on her or something." You know, she was just like, She's hard. But I thought the wig. I'm telling you, you don't want to mess with Darkseid Dunham. But I thought the wig was a cop out, people. I can't believe you guys were okay with that because she even wears it like a wig. If they'd given her like a cool like East German cut, you know, or something else. It just looks mousy. It looks mousy. It doesn't even look real.
Trust me, if someone would have heard you talking about this in the writer's room, we would have got Olivia with an eye patch or a peg leg.
Awesome, man. The goatee, man, I'm telling you.
Or like a laser, a cybernetic eyeball with like a red light in the center.
Look, all I'm asking for is an evil haircut. That's all I want, just something sharper, you know? It's mousy.
Red hair, come on.
I thought it took like 5 years off her age. Off her character's age.
Yeah.
So would pigtails. That ain't gonna work though.
Wow. You were just, you know, that infuriated by her hair.
I was infuriated by the hair. I'm sorry. The hair bothered me. It bothered me.
Well, did you like her hair in the Noor episode, the musical episode?
Well, it was all right.
That was nice. That was very nice.
Yeah. I mean, it at least looked more natural, I think, than the wig. That was bad. But I'm teasing about that. But it bothered me. The whole episode was like, come on, they couldn't have done anything better than that. But oh man, don't forget Nimoy. Seeing Nimoy was awesome in this episode. Since Star Trek, has he been in a gunfight and anything? That it was fun to see him finally getting back into a gunfight somewhere.
Man, I thought he looked so brittle. I thought he was gonna break.
Well, you know, he does have the energy transference thing. He's a little bit, you know, a little flimsy anyway. But so it fit in with the story. But still,
he was pure energy.
Pure energy. Yes. Thanks. Yes. Well done. Well done on that one. Yeah. So it was good to see him. I always like Nimoy.
Yeah.
Well,
but supposedly his last acting role ever.
Yeah. Yeah. That's sad.
Isn't he in his 70s?
Oh yeah. Definitely. Or. He's got to be knocking on 80.
Yeah, look, he can't be getting around like that anymore.
Hey, he has given plenty. I do not hate for finally retiring. He has been there. Like I said, he went out well. Everything that he's done this past 2-3 years has been really good. Very solid performances. I'm so happy and sad to see him at the same time.
Yeah.
I don't know. And like they did so many interesting things narratively to They did many things to set up writing him out to explain why he would never show up again. But then they also left back doors open so that they could also bring him back in. It was very much a have your cake and eat it too.
Because, again,
he already announced that it's his last role. And in the episode itself, I think Walter asked him, you know, where's your alternate self, Belly? And he said, oh, he didn't even exist here. He was killed, you know, 60 years ago in a car crash. Mm-hmm. He's not even around. And so that ties it all up to where, oh, even if we lose, you know, Nimoy Prime, there's not going to be another Nimoy Omega. But earlier
in Omega Nimoy.
But earlier in the first part of the two-parter, we got to see Max Headroom Nimoy.
That was cool.
You know, and because that could have been a cop-out right there, because, you know, I was a little bit worried that that might be the only Nimoy we get was just his voice and the CGI Nimoy, but then we saw him in the park. And it's, even though they say he was supposedly killed in a car crash, it doesn't mean anything. You know, they can do anything they want.
It's a sci-fi, absolutely.
Or they can bring back William Bell in the alternate world because he had reconstructive surgery after the crash, and they could bring in some other amazing actor. You know,
there's no one quite like him.
Out of the mothballs. Oh, no, of course there's no other Nimoy.
Look, the dude's pure energy. He could just come back as a ghost.
That would piss me off.
I know, I know.
Watch Abrams. Watch Abrams pull like a Shatner next year or something like that. Dust off another.
Not Shatner. He's too cheesy.
I don't think I want to see Sulu up there, though. That would not.
Oh, Sulu could do anything he wants. Sulu could do anything he wants.
No. If you look into the parallel universe, you see yellow. No, I do not.
Want to see. What's that thing he does? Oh, God. Let's see. That musical episode was not really musical at all that much.
It wasn't, but what it had, I was down with it.
I liked it. I love the hair. Oh, and the lipstick, the red lipstick. I bought some lipstick. Okay, off topic. But yeah, I just I like what they're doing with the show. I mean, we have the red theme music or theme color now. So what did you call it? The crimson intro? Or something,
Eric? That's what I had seen on Twitter. Yeah, I didn't call it the term, but yeah, people are calling it something like that, like the crimson fringe or the blush or the, you know, pick whatever adjective you like. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I was all about the 80s.
Oh, yeah, the 80s show.
That was the one that just blew me away when it aired live. It just completely took me by surprise.
It felt great. It really took me back, too, because it felt like all of those old, you know, computer literacy intros from back in the day when it was like, ooh, what's new for the Apple IIe? You know, it nailed it on that.
Yeah, see, it's been my ringtone ever since. I couldn't resist it. I watched it like 10 times over, like as it was playing live. I had to keep replay. It just reminded me of all those shows I used to watch in the 80s. With the graphics and everything.
That is awesome. I need that ringtone.
yeah, it is awesome.
That's good. What else?
I thought the musical episode was a little weird. It was right on the edge for me. I was like, what they doing here? What they doing? But everybody just looked so great that I just had to get.
Oh, you just had a crush on Astrid.
They had to have a holodeck episode. Come on,
Astrid was smoking in that episode. Oh my God! she just started singing. She needed that job. I was like, I don't. I'll give her a job.
Poor Carl.
She was beautiful.
What a cap.
But you know. Now, Dunham singing, however.
Hey, I liked it. I'm not because of the singing, because it was a good moment. And it was.
Yeah, it was a good moment, but it seems a little rough there.
Yeah, but it's not about that. It's not about singing pitch perfect for me. It's just.
Wow, I can't wait to hear your freaking Lost review because you just let a lot of stuff slide. Dude, she was pretty bad.
I wasn't concentrating on, like, the pitch of the tone. I was. Like concentrating on the emotion and like So I was even thinking about those things at the time.
Well, yeah, I was concentrating on two, but I can multitask, and so yeah,
because it was irrelevant to me. It was, you know,
I found the pitch rather imposing.
No, because it's like
I was trying to look around that, but man, she was coming at me.
I'm just not that critical. I mean, like in real life, I encourage friends to do the karaoke, whatever, and then. When they're horrendous,
yeah, but
it's okay. I'm just glad that they're doing it, and you know that's like enough for me. Like E for effort.
Oh wow, that's how I feel. Hippie.
What?
Let's just all be love.
Kumbaya.
No, yeah. No, that's
it's all about the F.
Yeah, everybody's great. Whatever.
You guys are talking about somebody else because
yeah,
that has nothing to do with me.
Okay. Wow. See, look at that. He just goes into his own world. That's great. We love you, Eric.
I never left it. No, but I want to say too about season two before we wrap it up, because season one was definitely some peaks and troughs throughout the whole season. There was some good stuff at the beginning, and then there was a bunch of filler episodes, and then it didn't ramp up till maybe about five episodes to the end. Then you started seeing some cohesion and where it was going in season one. But yeah. Season two, it was pretty tight because there was just a few fillers. Like I'm looking at the whole thing, maybe episodes 4 through 10 were a little bit fillery, but right after that everything fit into the whole, you know, puzzle. And I'm looking at the whole list and my goodness, they had 22 episodes. I don't know how they do it in American television now, because I'm getting so used, or American network television, I'm getting so used to either, you know, British shows or cable shows where it's become very common to have, like, you know, maybe 13, 14 episodes max. Mm-hmm. And for traditional network television shows to bust out 22 episodes, you know, I don't know how they keep it so engaging and so strong, because there's...
They go on breaks, though. They go on mid-season breaks.
Yeah, but at Fringe, too, they only took a break. They took off about 10 days.
3 months.
They took off 10 days in December, and then they took off practically all of February and March. It wasn't actually 3 whole months, but it was like the whole February and March they took it off. But that was it. That was only 2 months from September till now. You know, hardly any show can do that. Because like I said, they have 22 episodes. You know, even other shows only do about 20 now. You know, it's hardly anybody goes past the 20 mark these days anymore. So I thought it was awesome.
I agree with you, because, like I said in the beginning, Fringe started interesting. When it first came out, I thought it was good. And then it just did something bad. It was like bland X-Files or something. Mm-hmm.
And
I actually stopped watching it during the first season. I was like, this is not going to make it. But toward the end of the first season, they started getting better. They started getting a little more coherent. And this season, Fringe has become what I hoped it would be, which is, you know, it's a little bit more on the science and technology. It's, you know, they had better story arcs that actually fit together one after another. Stuff started making sense. I just thought it was so much better now. And I'm really talking it up to my friends, like, hey, you got to start watching Fringe. You got to check it out. It's really good now. Yeah. And I can say that with some confidence.
They really fixed it, because I remember it was on quasi life support in season one, because the only shows it was beating in its first season were anything on the CW and Dollhouse were the only things it was beating. Everything else was beating it, you know, Heroes, Chuck, et cetera. Everything else was beating it. And then after season one and then coming in season two, it was still a little bit of a middle dog underdog. But as Heroes continued to go in a downward spiral, Fringe was doing like the exact opposite at the same. Because I was looking at the graphs like on the internet, and they were showing like the week by week ratings for Heroes going downward, and Fringe had the exact like mirror opposite going upward at the same time. And they basically came out on top as the dominant. Okay, aside from Lost, obviously, they became the most dominant genre show ratings wise by the end. Aside from Lost. And no one really predicted that, you know, that was not a sure thing going into this. And I was just happy the whole way through.
I was going to say, I wonder if Fringe can be the Lost replacement. I don't know if it's that strong enough.
I wouldn't say it's, and I don't know that it ever will be that strong, because it's still more genre where Lost was more, you know,
yeah,
could pick up more of a general audience. Fringe is more towards this, obviously. It's leaning more towards
cult. Yeah, I know, but I mean, we've done it before with something like X-Files. X-Files was mm-hmm. like killer. Mm-hmm. You know, it had really good, and we kind of like got everybody into X-Files. Everybody knew about it. The ratings were killer. So while I love Fringe, I just don't see it doing that though. So I have to agree.
You mean X-Files? You mean you don't see it doing like
what X-Files I don't see it doing as well.
The reason I think it won't do what X-Files did is just because the whole culture of television has changed since when X-Files was, you know, at its stride. Because, you know, everything's so fragmented nowadays. Everyone has their own niche show on any, you know, channel 227. They're showing, you know, Lifestyles of Gumby or something. There's like whatever you're into, it's like out there somewhere. So everyone's so fractured. But X-Files struck right before Pandora's Box opened, to where if you were like a nerd but you wanted to watch the cool nerd show, like X-Files was pretty much the only cool nerd show at the time. So mm-hmm. they pretty much had their audience cornered at, you know, at that point. And we're just not going to see that again, unfortunately, like that kind of situation. But that being said, like, I know a lot of people who missed the Lost bandwagon. So, because, you know, a lot of people, they missed that first year or two, and they just
didn't bother.
Yeah, because they were just
Hi, Carl, how are you?
I was about to say, that's exactly what happened with me. And it's not that I didn't think I wouldn't like it. It was just, I looked up, and a year had passed, and people are talking about these intricate storylines and dependencies and arcs that are crazy. And I said, well, I can't jump in now. Maybe I'll get it a little bit later. And I looked up and, you know, a decade had gone by and I've just the whole thing.
Meanwhile,
I'm sitting here asking Kat, so how was the finale? Should I watch this series? You know, it was pretty sad.
Meanwhile, I've watched the entire show like three times from the beginning. Like, because it was so good, I had to go back and watch it a second time and go back and watch it a third to see everything I missed the first two times. But, no, I know plenty of people like Carl. Pretty much everyone I know who's a Lost hater falls into that camp of you missed the boat. Because I don't know anyone who actually sat down and said, yeah, I watched the whole damn six seasons and I hated it. I've mm-hmm. never met that person. You know,
I mean, you could be disappointed with the ending, but nobody's going to hate the whole thing
if you
sat through it and watched
it. Yeah, I know no one. You know, and I even got people just in this last year of Lost, I got people who were around me, so there was like guilt by association, because I was watching it, of course, religiously, and people who were around me in my sphere here, they had never watched Lost ever, and they would just walk by and they'd see what I was watching, and they would sit in on any random episode, and even though they didn't know any of the characters or any of the setup or what was this island business, they were able to just watch 30 minutes of one episode randomly, and they could be entertained and not even know any of the characters' names.
And, well, Carl, there's hope for you in Lost then.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I have a spare four consecutive days, perhaps I'll break out.
Two,
the DVD
you're gonna
set.
Need longer than that.
Yeah. But I got sidetracked, because what I meant to say was this about Fringe, that I've noticed people who missed the Lost boat, they've kind of seen Fringe as like, well, it's only one season, well, last year that I missed. So I know people right now who are just starting Fringe from the beginning, mm-hmm. and because they feel like it's still, you know, it's not too large yet, and they know that people are talking about it. And so I think the people who missed the Lost boat are kind of like Fringe is picking up the stragglers, I think. That's what I've seen. And same thing over in England, too, because obviously I have a lot of Twitter friends in the UK and other English-speaking countries. And
I wonder why.
They mostly all agree that, like, again, the ones who missed the Lost boat pretty much all agree that Fringe is the best genre show that America's putting out as far as they're concerned.
Sweet.
So
it's pretty cool.
You know.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of UK, we can talk about Doctor Who up until like the vampire episode, and that's what we're gonna do. Have we talked about it on the show already?
Oh, absolutely not. We only went up to the Daleks.
Oh God, yeah, the Daleks. So, Carl is watching on BBC America, right?
That's right.
That's right. So the last episode that aired was Vampires in Venice. We kind of know how Eric feels because he has a whole podcast dedicated to Doctor Who, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Whoverse. But I'd like to hear kind of what Carl has to say about how you feel about, you know, Doctor Who so far and what's going on in your head. Are you bored? Are you hyped? Are you, what's going on?
Well, okay. You know, those aliens from the series premiere that had the giant eye and were flying around, you know, what are those things called again?
The Atraxi.
Being on a show with Eric talking about Doctor Who, it's like the Atraxia right here. They're right here on me with the eyeball looking down. Because Eric's knowledge of Doctor Who is frightening. I have got to say right now, it is frightening. So for me to even venture into the space of Doctor Who, I'm intimidated.
You have an opinion, though. I mean,
It's the eye. I'm afraid of the eye.
But Eric, even though he is like that, he enjoys hearing other people's opinions on how they felt and their perspective on how they saw things, because he has such a, you know, up close view of it that he, I mean, he's fair. He loves to hear other people's.
Yeah, because honestly, whether it's Twitter, whether it's, you know, doing a podcast like this with people I've never met, and even in real life all the time, if I see anyone or know anyone, random stranger, who I hear that they watch Doctor Who or they're even a little bit interested, all of a sudden I have like 20 questions of just to them about what they think about it. I want to, like, every fan, great and small, and I talk to kids who are like 8 years old. I talk to these guys who are like 50 and, you know, watched it in PBS in the 70s, and anybody on any level of Doctor Who knowledge, or I know tons of people who just started watching it within the last 2 years only, and I talk to any and everyone, and I want to hear everyone's piece.
There are no attracts here, Carl.
See, after that, why should I be concerned, right?
Yeah, there are no attracts. But, I mean, how do you feel? Do you even like it? Are you bored? Do you love it? Is it like the second coming? What?
To me, so far, it's been kind of hit and miss. What I think is interesting is I was most looking forward to the Dalek episode, and I got to say, I was pretty disappointed with that one.
How many times did you watch it?
Three
times. Okay, well, then I don't have anything to say.
Yeah. I mean, you know, how are you going to be devastating the universe in iPod colors? Just for starts, right?
Well, no, I thought watching it a second time, it just seemed much more epic and more, I don't know, exciting, because I got over the fact that I did not want to see Daleks, you know? Yeah. And after I got over the fruity flavor Daleks and all that, I just, it was a really good fun ride. So I think the second viewing helped, but you said you watched it three times, so I don't know.
Yeah, I saw your post about it, so I did give it a second and third try. And it was okay. I don't know. Like I said, I have not had the big win as far as these episodes have gone, like I have in the past with Doctor Who. There have been parts that felt right to me, but not, it just isn't really knocking them out of the park for me yet. I enjoyed the Angels episode, that was good and that was interesting. But still, I mean, like the Library episode. You go back to Library episode, the first episode where we see the Angels. Each of those really resonated with me in terms of the pacing, in terms of how tight the stories were, in terms of it being something new and really powerful. We talked before, but like I said, I loved how the stories can make benign things terrifying. You know, the statues, shadows, water. I liked how they have been able to do that in the history of Doctor Who, particularly the new series. I haven't felt that yet with any of the new episodes. I'm still waiting for something to really grab me. I even like the old theme better, you know, from the previous season. I thought it was a little more powerful than what they got now.
I have a excuse me. I have a few, like, dozen questions, real quick, because
yes.
because
here comes the attraction.
Because I've found so many interesting things that have come up, like in discussing this new series with everybody and hearing what everybody else is saying among themselves. And I discovered now that talking about this new series of Doctor Who, since it's changed so much so quickly, it's almost like talking about politics, but in sci-fi, because like if we were just all talking about politics right now, we have no idea where everyone's coming from. So we have no way of telling where the conversation is going to go. And I found that's the way it is now with Doctor Who, because everyone's coming at it in at it from a different angle, and everyone's actually part of a different group. So I feel like I have to qualify everyone now just to understand where they're coming from. So I'm curious, like, so
who is his favorite doctor or first doctor?
We don't even have to get that deep. But I mean, like, you've watched it all since like 2005 or the majority of it. Yep. So what was your favorite season of the new ones,
And, you know, I don't even break them out well in seasons. I can do episodes.
Was there like a particular period, like maybe you liked him with, you liked that particular doctor with that particular companion, or was there a certain story arc, or was there a certain season finale that worked for you really well, better than the others?
Let me say this, because I am not even a doctor biased so much. I can accept the changes in doctors. I can accept changes in companions. I liked everybody except what's the name? Yeah, Donna really grated on my nerves. Mm. Yeah, Donna really.
Like Donna.
But that's, you know, that even like I said, that's not such a big thing. What I love most about Doctor Who, the series in total, is it takes me places that I haven't been before. Like I said, even the choice of bad guys or evil, I love how it is something that is different than I have seen before. Whether it is the nature of what the evil is, the plausibility of the doom that they bring down in each of these episodes, I really like, whether it's big or small, I like that. I like seeing things I haven't seen before. And that's what really engages me about Doctor Who always. I mean, back in the day when they had no budget, what was fun is going through space and time, planets and universes and all of it. It was fun. So show me something I haven't seen before. I'm always asking for that. That's why I like sci-fi. You got, like I said before, you got all of the universe, parallel universes to go through, all of time. I don't want to see things that I've seen elsewhere. So that's what I really enjoy about him. So like the episodes that I'm talking about, the first Angels one, I really, really loved that one. I liked, it's a lot of times it's pieces of the episodes too, where it's the bad guy. I did really like the library one, because again, it was the peril that was in that one, and the turns with you know, who, where was the library? Who, where did the shadow things come from? What, you know, the ecological bent, the scope of it, all the things, you know, and of course, Doctor saves everybody in the end. You know, he just downloads the, it was just so much fun, and it was so different and so unexpected at every turn, something new, something different, something unexpected, something scary. So with this new season, I'm watching and I'm looking for that same kind of thing. I'm looking for that same kind of innovation. And like I say, I feel newness in terms of the characters, in terms of the effects, in terms of the tools. But I'm not feeling that sense of really innovation, of strangeness that I have always loved about the season. And it's early. It's early on. You know, I'm sure they're going to pull out something great. But so far, I don't have that yet. And that's what's kind of leaving me a little incomplete about the new one.
Okay.
Wow.
Check this out.
Nice.
Check this out.
Attracts
all
time.
Right, enter the head doctor. Because I feel like you've been sitting on my Doctor Who couch, and you just kind of, you know, poured your mind. And just based on this last 8-10 minutes that you just went on, you've pretty much given me fodder to go for about an hour to kind of touch on and address like everything you just brought up, because you just had my mind spinning, brainstorming, because you made me just think of so many things right now. I don't even know where to begin. Let me see.
Well, what are you? What approach are you taking? Are you going to try to sell them on it?
Everything Carl was saying. It brought up so many things that I've already pondered on so much. There's two main.
But
things.
I mean, what are you? Are you trying to take it from an angle? Or are you trying to sell him on it that it's his mind, or do you agree with him that it's a different and it has a sameness? I mean, where are you going with?
No. I won't even. It'll just sully the whole thing if I start throwing in my own personal opinions. I just think it's just very interesting where he's coming from, because you guys don't know. I've listened to like every Doctor Who podcast out there right now that's reviewing the new series. I've been listening to like 20 different podcasts, and each one, the hosts are coming from completely different angles. I'm hearing, you know, old school fans, new school fans, amateur average fans. I've heard teenage fans, and I've heard everyone, and I kind of like look at it all, and I see where Carl fits into the mix. But he also said some other things that I just thought were really interesting at the beginning, because I haven't really spoken about this, because I've had this like crazy controversial like thesis I've been working on in my mind, but I don't ever bring it up because if Ike Brown fans, because then they'll just want to lynch me or something, because it's so it upsets two different camps at the same time, and you know, which leaves me nowhere in between. Because what Carl was talking about how why he likes Doctor Who in general, and how it throws out these kind of like original unexpected concepts that you're not used to seeing like in other sci-fi or fantasy shows, it's an extremely important point. And see, I'm thinking about this because one day if I ever write my collegiate thesis, it's going to be on this, and it's going to be
a doctorate on the doctor.
It's going to be about Doctor Who, the anti SG-1, because this is something I've been thinking about ever since I started, you know, sludging through SG-1 a couple years ago. And now that I understand SG-1 a lot better, or the whole franchise in general a lot more, like, I didn't ever want to say anything because, like, I always, you know, I mingle with Doctor Who fans, and to them, the SG universe in general is just such a dirty word, because to most Doctor Who fans, SG-1 is the most polar opposite sci-fi show on the planet.
Well, you know what I was thinking though, Eric, because I was thinking our sci-fi shows back in the day used to be more Shakespearean. They used to be more play based. I mean, if you watch TNG or any of them, they're all just, they had that magnificent theatrical feel to them. And then SGU, it, on the other hand, is very American and rough, and I think that's what we're missing from science fiction, and that's what's, you know, making science fiction kind of dull for American TV, is that we just don't have that grand, you know, theatrical scope anymore.
The Shakespearean thing is dead and gone, but you know,
but I'm just saying that's what Doctor Who has. It has that big costumey feel. It makes you feel like Carl said, you're going somewhere different that you haven't been before, and we don't get that here. Like on SGU, we're just not getting that. Everything is military. Everything is
yes, and everything's by the numbers, not just in the plots, but in the production and everything. But I was going even further, because if I ever do this thesis, you know, Doctor Who fans, generally speaking, hate the Stargate universe. And everything about it. And they always make fun of it because they feel like it's doing everything wrong, and that Doctor Who does right. But see, I always got kind of nervous because the more I learned about SG-1, even though I don't really like SG-1, but the more I learned about it, the more I started thinking SG-1 and Doctor Who actually have like a lot in common. They come off completely different, but to me, they're like sewn of the same cloth. And it really makes me think about the whole, I know this is, Carl's not going to understand the Lost reference, but to me it's very Jacob, Man in Black, because they seem so opposite, but deep down inside they actually share so much, and I feel the same way about Doctor Who and SG-1. It's just they execute it completely differently, but in a weird way they have the same mission, because when I started watching SG-1 and I started, because again, I was a noob to SG-1 2 years ago, and I started understanding, because you know, you pick up on the structure real quick. There's, you know, the SGC, and then there's the gate, and the gate is the doorway to, you know, feasibly any location anywhere practically. And mm-hmm. to me, the SGC was the TARDIS interior. The gate was the TARDIS doors. And on the other side of those doors could be practically anywhere. And when I was watching the old SG-1, like seasons 1 through 5, it reminded me of...
I could see that.
It reminded me very much of classic Doctor Who stories where you always got... And again, you know, I'm not even going to like post links to this on any of my Doctor Who stuff, because if any of my Doctor Who friends find out that I've been sleeping with the enemy, like, you know, I'm going to lose all my cred.
Wait, SGU is sleeping with the enemy?
Yes, it is.
Come on, dude, that's ridiculous.
Because the things I'm saying right now are so, like, blasphemous. Like,
how is that blasphemous?
It makes a lot of sense. I know it does, but it makes a lot of sense. Of course it does. But
Carl, does that make a lot of sense, or is it stupid?
Eric is being very wise here. I am totally with you that you keep it on this podcast, because it's the heresy of trying to connect SG-1 and Doctor Who. I really feel that way?
Because it's like trying to tell. I mean, this is probably a horrible analogy. It's a horrible analogy, but it's like trying to tell, like, let's just say Aryans. I don't want to say Nazis. It's like trying to tell Aryans that they're not special. It's like, this is what it's like, because you're saying, no, you're just like everyone else. You're the same. And to Doctor, no, we're not. We're special. We have our special club and our special handshake, and we have nicer clothes, and no, we're not like you, but actually you are like us. See, that's why it's so contentious, because they don't want to be like SG-1 or in any way, shape, or form. But again, I couldn't help but feeling these feelings as I was watching it, because just like in SG-1, what did you have? You had either historical or future episode when they went to another planet. You either had like a medieval type society, Bronze Age, or tribal, or you had a quasi, like something similar to us or more futuristic a little bit, almost like Sliders, almost like mm-hmm, Alt-World. Mm-hmm. Classic Doctor Who was exactly the same.
Classic.
They had medieval episodes. They had futuristic.
When you talk about SG-1, every time they would land on Planet Canada, where, you know, out in the woods something happened. Mm-hmm. When in Doctor Who, classic mm-hmm. series, it was Planet Rock Quarry. It was the same thing. Yes. It just popped up at the same place. It always got started where, you know, the natives that you encounter, something's amiss. And you've got to figure out, are the native folks are good or are they bad? Are they bad because they are natively bad, or is there an external force that is impacting them? And how can we work our way through this to solve and crack this?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then, of course, whenever they go to a new planet on either show, like there's only like one of four things that could happen, or different interchanges of that, because they may or may not get separated from the gate, i.e. TARDIS, and get cut off.
Yep.
And they won't be able to work that out to the end, how to get back. They may or may not get captured or imprisoned many multiple times and escape and get recaptured. The companions or squad will get separated. This person might get knocked into a coma for the first half. These other two go off back around the other side. There's a ridiculous amount of correlations.
There is a bit of a formulaic overlap there. That's true. That's very broad, mind. Very broad.
Yes. And see, I feel like for me to call this out and bring it up among, you know, Doctor Who nerds or who anybody, it's kind of like, you know, saying the Emperor has no clothes about the prestigious Doctor Who. And I think I brought it up for about 30 seconds at the Doctor Who convention before I was like shot down and blacklisted. So I was like, oh, okay, I'm not gonna bring that up anymore. I'm not gonna bring that up again. So I feel like it's my little secret. And
it's not anymore. They're gonna listen to this.
No, they're not. This is not ever going. But anyway.
But what I'm just saying, if somebody happens to listen to this, one of your enemies, then you're exposed.
And that was the first half of what Carl made me think of in general, because I could go on, but. There's more. I mean, now addressing what he was saying about nothing's really done it for him yet. The Angel episode was good, but there's nothing that's really been very compelling or outstanding thus far up to the Venice episode for him. And I understand that because, again, listening to all those other podcasts and talking to other people, there are a lot of people who have, like, Carl very much mirrors, like, UK fans who are like the majority of the Doctor Who watchers. You know what I mean? Because it's, because even though, see, I get trapped in the we of like the super fans, but we only make up what, I don't know, 5 or 10% of the UK population who casually watches Doctor Who every week. Who they don't know the names of every single character from the last 5 years. They don't know the names of all the episodes, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And Carl kind of fits that model. And I hear them saying very similar things to Carl. And I felt this since the second episode. And of course, I'm a little bit further than Carl. And the deeper we get into this season, the more I'm getting kind of excited, but I'm keeping it to myself. Keeping it to myself because,
well, I'm at the same place in the season with you.
And yes, you are, but you and I haven't even. I don't think that you and I have even had a chance to talk about this on or offline. The hidden things going on. I mean, yeah, I've told no.
I mean, but they're just so exhausting. I mean, not everybody's going to look that deep, and they're just like the latest episode, Carl, that you haven't seen. I'm not going to say anything other than, I was very underwhelmed.
See, and I'm not even going to talk about that one because, again, you know, we're kind of talking to mostly people who are with Carl right now.
I know, that's why I said that's the only thing that I'm going to say about it. Yeah, so I still feel the same way that Carl feels about it, and I'm, what, 3 episodes ahead of him, too?
I understand that. I understand that completely.
But so I don't understand.
Because, Kat, see, you and I, again, even though you're caught up with me, and we've talked about some of the things.
So what you're saying, you have to sell this episode in a podcast
I don't even want to do that. I'm not even going to do that.
So what is this talking about?
Because I'm just saying that I'm kind of in on the secret. And
oh God, yeah, no.
And when it comes to fruition, and I don't know what's going to happen. I literally don't know. But I see the signposts. I don't know where they're taking us, but they're taking us somewhere. And I don't know what the big surprise is going to be, but I've seen all the groundwork laid out since the first and second episode onward. In every single episode, I've seen the groundwork be laid, and very few people have seen, like you, Kat, you've seen that bit and you've seen that bit, but you haven't seen all the bits and you haven't put them all together.
Well, you know, okay, I want to save it because...
Okay,
well,
hang on. Let me just throw this in there because, okay, I enjoy a good story arc. That's true. And probably the best example of story arcs in sci-fi that I can think of is Babylon 5. All right? It took me a while to warm up to Babylon 5, but at its best, some of its arcs were, you know, seasons long and they were hinting and all that. And I loved the crescendos of the old story arcs of the best of Babylon 5. But the point is episode to episode, they still held my attention. There was still something going on. I hear what you're saying, and I'm not giving up on Who or anything. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to look for the stuff that you're talking about. But I still need to be engaged during these episodes one by one. They need to be able to stand alone in their uniqueness and in what they're bringing me to engage me here. Because I know something's up with the crack. I know it's following around. I know all this. And I see that it's building to something that's going to be big. But in the meantime, come on, vampires. I got to see more vampires. This is Doctor Who. You know, I am.
It weren't really vampires.
Please, that doesn't make it any better. That really did not help it at all. So I'm holding out hope and I'm being optimistic because I know what Doctor Who's capable of and I know what this team is capable of. But in the meantime, I need to be, you know, excited on the way for this completion to occur. I need to see something now during each of these episodes because, like I said, even the ones I'm talking about had some fantastic moments. Like I said, the library, I'm taking you back to the angels, standing alone. They had some fantastic, think about that angels episode. It wasn't even, Doctor Who wasn't even in the episode for 80% of what was going on. We were following these crazy kids around a video store that we'd never even seen before. Mm-hmm. And what we saw and how the story was put together and the unveiling of the bad guy, just in that one story standing alone, is what gripped me, held my attention, and was something new. And so that is my greatest criticism so far about what's going on with the new season. I'm holding out, you know, faith and hope, and you know, and I believe that there is going to be something big happening. But I'm telling you, what I have seen so far has been interesting, It's been okay. It's been, you know, nice, and I'm appreciating the new Doctor. But in terms of what I've looked for and what's been the best about this series, in my opinion, I have not seen it yet. And that even if this, you know, comes together with a massive crescendo, it still does not address the fact that the standalone episodes that I've seen so far have not taken me places. That's the problem. But here's the other thing. Wouldn't you expect them to learn a lesson by now? I mean, if you've got a staff put together or the series that has been consecutive, not like you took 20, 30 years off in between, mm-hmm. shouldn't you be learning how to, I mean, okay, look at Fringe, right? You want to take it back? Look at Fringe. Fringe, the first season, it started really great in the beginning, and then we talked about that dog time in there where I don't know where the heck it was going. But now look at season two. Episode after episode.
I think that's Eric's point.
But what I'm saying is this is only two seasons of Fringe. And with the same staff, the same group of people, they managed to start to bring the series out. And one built on the next episode, built on the next, where each one was getting better. It's like they were learning the lessons of the past. And so they used what they learned to make the show better and newer.
But this is a whole new thing. This is a brand new TV show.
This is good, though. Because, you see, Doctor Who, instead of being like a Fringe, the new Doctor Who, it's actually done almost like a Heroes. Not exactly, though. Not exactly.
Do you really want to draw on that one?
Because it's almost very similar to Heroes, except that Heroes' best season was its first. But it's, okay, take Heroes, take the first season, make it the second season, as far as how good it was, and then put the second to the first, and then keep everything else the same. That's kind of like how New Who was. Because the first season was kind of like, this is good. Well, once we saw the whole first season. Like, it was good. I felt that. That was worth it. That was good. That was awesome. Bring me more. Second season was, in my opinion, the most generally accepted best season of New Who, looking back after it's all been said and done. And that was like their first season Heroes. It was like people, once they got comfortable with Tennant, and they just, people went completely nuts, and the season finale of season two like broke all kinds of UK viewing figure records. Okay, and that was like a really huge high point when Rose went out and everything like that. But then bit by bit it started losing its mojo in the third season, and even more in the fourth season, even though there was nice pieces here and there like Blink and other things that were really, really stellar that stood out. But as a whole season, though, they were like running out of gas. And if it was an American show, it would have been kind of on the bubble. American show, because in England it still had crazy ratings. But if it was an American show, it just wasn't as good. Okay, now taking it further with Heroes is, okay, we know Heroes got canceled, and it was four seasons essentially. Well, Doctor Who season five is a completely, well, almost pretty much completely new production crew. So season five is like, you're bringing in a whole new staff from the ground up. Directors, writers, producers, costumer. Everyone's different except the guy who's writing the score. Even all the actors are completely different. They've basically completely recast Heroes in front of and behind the camera. And that's what Doctor Who Season 5 is. So it's going to be like the same, but not the same. And you don't... And then the thing is, though, see, for me, I'm loving it, season 5, because I think it's just awesome. I think it's corrected so many wrongs that were creeping in. I realize other people, not everyone sees it that way. But I think what they're trying to do right now with this transition, for those people who are not on board yet, I think this season 5, this whole experiment of the whole season, this is my guess, is they're trying to retrain people, the ones who haven't figured it out yet, that this is not going to be the same Doctor Who, not quite, that we had the last 4 or 5 years. And this season is going to be like the break-in season to tell you that it's going to be a little bit different now. And once you start to understand how it's different, then you can appreciate it better. And I think it's really going to, like, because I think people are going to be much more homogenized by the time we get to the end of season one, because everyone's going to be much more on board at that point. That's, yeah. I think season six is just going to really rock, because I think more of us are going to be more on the same page at that point.
Do you buy that, Carl?
I know you don't see it, but see,
I understand it. But I do have a little faith in how you see this because of the Fringe thing, and you predicted that, and you're very good and very observant on these TV shows. So, I can't be bored now. But I mean, Carl,
I like I said, and I have been with you from the beginning that I like a story arc, and I believe this is going to crescendo well. But all I'm saying is, they're not doing a great job in the meantime.
But it's, again, for 50% of people, they're not doing a good job.
You could compare it to season by season, whatever. They're not doing it yet. And if it was an American series, like I said, remember, look, Earth 2, Defying Gravity, these shows surprisingly actually did have an interesting arc at the end. But the problem is they didn't stay on air long enough for us to get to that because people just wandered off.
Again, luckily, Doctor Who will get to see its end, and then people will realize, oh, see, they've subtly changed the rules of the game. Unfortunately,
but look,
a lot of people don't realize the rules have changed. And so there's
still, because we're used to watching crappy TV and we're not.
Yes, yes. Yes, it's true. It's true. It's true. People are looking for the same things that they're used to that they think are good. They're not seeing it, therefore it's not good. What they don't realize is there's so much more packed in here that we're not used to because it didn't exist. There are so many things in season, from my point of view, there are so many things in season 5 that never existed in the previous seasons. That's why I'm so giddy over here. But it's like everyone else has to catch up. And it's not just with, I'm not just excluding new Who fans either, because I think a lot of old Who fans are almost on the same bus. And I'm like sitting here, you know, hitting my, you know, my friends, my old school Doctor Who friends and saying, hey, come on. Don't you realize what's really going on here? Come on, get on. Because I saw from episode 1 and 2 of the new season. I've been listening to all the, like I said, I'm listening to all these old podcasts and everyone was saying the craziest things. Cause I've been listening to the reviews of season 1 and 2. I'm still trying to catch up because there's so many out there. And it's so funny to me to hear what people are saying in 1 and 2 and how all that's been addressed now by episode 8 and 9. And see, I was hesitant to say all those bad-mouthing things back in episode 1 and 2 because I had a feeling that things were going to change and that things that seemed wrong in the beginning were by design wrong. And it's so funny. And I feel like all those podcasts should be eating crow right now. But again, the memory cheats. Everyone forgets everything they said like 4 weeks ago. And they just drive on like, oh, this is a great season after all. And we're all going to pretend like it never was bad. Just like we did with all the other seasons of Doctor Who.
No, I don't think that's it. That's what I'm seeing. As an entire piece after it's all done.
No, because again, just last night I listened to podcasts from dated April 10th. That general time frame. Ones that I still hadn't heard. And to hear what people were saying back then, not knowing what we know now, all these things that bothered them. Oh, I didn't like this in episode 1. I didn't like this in episode 2. Blah. Surprise, those things were done on purpose to set up what happened 5 or 6 episodes later. It was by design. Things that seemed wrong all then were answered later. And I thought that from the start. I said, come on. They're not going to pull this crap for nothing.
Can't. A Prisoner Zero is here. That's all I'm gonna say. Prisoner Zero is here. Call it the Atraxi. That's it. I will wait.
But let me give you my one nugget that I never gave you earlier. Let me give you my one nugget that I did and I never gave you later. Never gave you earlier. But that fits into this. But anyway, okay, the one thing to hold on to, and you're not going to understand because I don't even know what it means yet. Well, I have my theories, but I'm not going to explain my theories. I'm just going to throw it out there. Probably the biggest thing.
Okay, no, you're going to explain it, aren't you?
No, I'm not. I'm just going to point it out, and you can do with it what you want because I've already taken it somewhere, but I'm not going
to
take it.
But I don't want you to point it out.
But it's important because what are we talking about?
No, because if it's important, we'll get it. I don't want you to point it out.
But it's there. But again, it doesn't give anything away.
Yeah, but you've been saying that you were going to give us that, like, and you gave it to us, and then
I haven't told you what it is. That was my freebie that it just hit me on the spur of the moment.
Well, yeah, no, but you told me, yeah, at the beginning of it, if it's red, then it's
that was not it.
But then if it's blue, and if he winked two times on that.
Again, why did people miss when I said that was completely an aside and had no relevance?
I know, but that was supposed to be the big thing.
That was not the big thing. I haven't even said the big thing yet. Let me say the big thing.
What if we don't want you to say,
it's not a spoiler. It was on the screen. It took place. It's just people didn't look at it, and it was right there.
Well, maybe we're not meant to. Maybe it was supposed to be like,
let me say what it is, and then you can tell me if I'm crazy.
But that's the thing. If you say it, then we're going to notice it, and then maybe we'll figure it out, and then maybe we'll have to eat crow now.
First of all, you're not going to figure it out. But secondly, this is what I'm trying to tell everyone. There's more. They're trying to teach you that this is not the same Doctor Who that you're used to.
Okay, out with it then.
And you guys keep complaining that, you know, well, this is, you know, it's not fair for
Eric,
you to keep
out
it
with it.
Angel episode, second episode of the Angel story. The Doctor is investigating the crack on the wall there, and the others take off into the oxygen. Come on, that wasn't cool. Anyway, they even call them treeborgs. Anyways, they go off into the little forest there, the oxygen tank, and the Doctor's investigating the crack, and we know the Angels like grab a hold of him, and they get a hold of his jacket, and he gets away, and he joins up with them later, and he's jacketless now, and blah 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 exposition. He's like, me and River, we need to go get to the control room or whatever. That's blah, blah, blah. Amy, you stay here with these guys. And she's like, no, we got to go do this, whatever. And he's like, let's go. And they take off. Him, River, and the Father Octavian take off. And Amy's like, no, don't go. And she's just sitting there with her eyes closed, sitting on the rock. And a few seconds go by, a few beats of nothingness, just Amy sitting there quietly. And then the Doctor's hands come back on. And then he puts his hands on her hands, and he says to her some words right there. He says a couple lines of dialogue right there, which seem a little bit odd and a little bit strange. If you could put yourself back when you saw it, if you remember it.
Yeah, it was a little bit.
It was strange. Like, what? Like, what is it?
Why did he come back so fast?
Yeah, yes. Okay. And everyone kind of generally had a weird feeling about that scene, but just kind of like, okay, I'll put that aside and then continued on with the story. Okay. Now, upon further review...
Okay, no, I want you to stop.
Upon further... Again, this is not a spoiler. It's just a signpost. Signpost is not a spoiler. And plus, it already happened like 2 weeks ago, even for those in America. Okay. If you go back and look at it again, that same scene. The Doctor just lost his jacket with the Angels. He walks off with River. A few seconds later, he pops back. The camera angle's now changed, and it's very much more in close, tight... to the Doctor and Amy's face. And it, you think it's all about the emotion because the Doctor gets kind of emotional and does his little jag and he puts his forehead on her forehead and you think, oh, that's why we're in this intimate moment. But if you look closely to the outer fringes of the screen, you'll see he's wearing a coat, a jacket. Okay, and some people saw that the first time and said, okay, that's weird because he didn't have the coat a second ago. We're not done yet. Okay, so he has the coat, and people said, okay, that's kind of weird. And then the very next scene after that, he's walking with River, they're far away, and he's not wearing the coat anymore. So some people actually saw it the first time and just said, okay, none of one of those production errors, because there's been some other, quote-unquote, production errors
Are we going to talk about Amy's hair this time?
Yeah, but wait. How was this? Because some people were saying this at the time. Like, I heard on podcasts, people go, but his coat, and people were like, get out of here. It's just a little mistake, blah, blah, blah. But here's how we know it's not a mistake. Because the coat that the Doctor lost from the Angels was a certain coat, and he never got it back after that. The coat that he wears, because he doesn't get a coat until the next episode, the Venice one. The coat that he wears in the Venice one, and this is not a spoiler, but the episodes after the Venice one is the same coat. It's a different coat. It's his new coat. But it looks very similar to the first one. But if you look closely, the material and the texture is completely different. It just has a similar color. And in that scene, the Angel episode scene, when the Doctor puts his hands on Amy's hands and you can barely see his coat in the outside of the screen, it's the new coat that he has not gotten yet. He has not worn yet. So are you going to tell me they had a production error where he wore a costume from a future episode? A completely accident, wardrobe mistake? Really? And then once you realize you realize he's wearing a different coat, go back and listen to what he says. Listen to the words and what he's saying in that awkward scene, and then think about everything again, going back to the 11th hour. And by the way, all this Prisoner Zero, I don't think you heard our show, Carl, when we talked about the episode. That was all Hitchhikers right there. All that business with the Atraxi, were the Volgans and Prisoner Zero, and they thought they were going to incinerate the house, but it was the bulldozer. And Amy was Arthur Dent. She was dressed in her
bathrobe. Right. Yes,
yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, that's why I was like getting giddy over the 11th hour, and nobody else saw the whole Hitchhikers thing.
Yeah, we got it.
But, yeah, I know, but just for the benefit of Carl, because he keeps reminding me of it. Every time he does that voice, it's reminding me of the Volgans.
He's saying that he didn't want to talk about Doctor Who because you were going to get all Atraxi on him, and now you're doing
that's just one big nugget.
It was a joke, Aaron. We're gonna wrap this show up.
I know, but what I just said, though, was one big nugget. There's so many more
to get
into.
I thought you just gave us the nugget.
I know, that was the big one. That was the big one, but there's many more.
Okay, well...
Every single episode of the season has been about looking and seeing. And it's weird. The Doctor keeps trying to say these things in its deliberate dialogue in every episode. And it's funny how they keep hammering or beating that drum and very few people are picking up on it. Even though when I watch it, I feel like I'm getting smashed in the face with it. And I'm like,
well, maybe people are picking it up subconsciously.
Yes,
and then
once it all comes together,
it'll be like, oh,
yes.
So yeah, we are watching. I think we are watching, but it's just like I'm watching and nothing's happening. And, you know,
yes, you're so right. That's it. You nailed it on the head right there. Because to me, I'm like, hello, they're trying to hold our hand, but it's just not like, again, they were too smart for themselves. They thought they put enough breadcrumbs for the general audience, but I guess they didn't, you know. But, you know, I think that's if I want to fault them on anything, it's that they did it. It was too mystical. But again, I know it's all going to, everyone's going to go, the light will turn on at the end of the tunnel, and probably people will rewrite history on this one just as they did. Because that's kind of what happened with all the previous ones. Once everyone's figured out what the whole season was about, they retconned the whole thing and said, oh, I love this season of Eccleston or Tenet. And I think people will do the same thing for Matt Smith. 2 years from now, everyone's going to be just, oh, it's Matt Smith. Yeah, he was awesome from the beginning. And I'm going to be going, wait a second, Carl. Wait a second, Kat. That's not what you were saying in 2010.
He just said up to this point. I mean, you can give him that. Up to this point.
Oh,
you have a certain feeling about it.
That's fine. Yeah.
But
I'm saying you won't remember it, though. I'm just saying you won't remember it 2 years from now. You won't remember that at this certain point that you felt this way.
Yeah,
I always remember. I always remember that. That's
well. I hope you do, because then it's, I think it'll make the rose smell sweeter at the end. Like that's why I'm so excited for this to all come down to the end. And
I am going to hang with it. So I hope things turn out great.
Yeah, because again, Doctor Who is that kind of show, and I. See, again, classic fans know that. New fans, they're more used to other normal TV shows where if a show sucks for 2 years in a row, it might get canceled. But Doctor Who's not like that. Sometimes we have to suffer 5 years, depending on what kind of Doctor Who you like, because classic fans differ themselves.
Doctor Who has never sucked for 5 consecutive years.
Oh, again, this never. Is rewriting history. Again,
Look,
there was... Okay, again, if we could go in our time machine... back to when people used to watch classic Doctor Who, there was people who loved the second Doctor, for instance. And then the third Doctor happened. It's all history repeating itself. It's you know, pick whatever metaphor you want. It's a continuous
cyclical.
Circle. It's cyclical. Yeah. Thank you. It's all cyclical because this has always been happening since Doctor Who. When they went from the second to the third, same thing happened. Everyone loved the second the way the show was. The third Doctor, the show completely changed. It made some people go, I love this new one. And it made other people go, this is blah. And for 5 years, they had to endure it. The people who didn't like it, if they stuck with it. 5 years later, the show again transformed as a whole, not just the Doctor, but everything. And again, everyone had to switch sides. Okay, you guys go to the left aisle, you guys go to the right side of the church. And then they enjoyed that for 4 years. And then a new producer came in, flipped it. Again, everyone had to stand up, change seats, sit down. This is the way it's always been in Class Doctor Who. And so old fans go, a lot of us, again, that's what we were doing with these seasons that we had already. It was our prequels. It was like, yeah, we'll be here. We'll watch it. It's all right. But it's not the Doctor Who we love, but it's okay. It's Doctor Who. Because we know we wait 4 or 5 years. Oh, there's a regime change. It's very much like presidential politics in this country. You know, you have to sit out for 4 years, 8 years, and then hopefully...
So what you're telling Carl is he need to sit out Matt Smith if he does. If he
I'm just saying if you look at Doctor Who in its totality, that's the way it is.
I'm going to give it a shot. See how it goes. And I would like to qualify. I have no problem with Matt Smith. No, there's nothing. It's not that. So I'm going to give it a shot, and we'll see how it goes.
Guys, this was a very interesting conversation. I could talk to Eric for hours because I love details like this. Carl, thank you for coming on and talking Fringe with us, which seemed like an hour ago, or maybe. And thanks for talking Doctor Who. We will see you next time. Give us a call at 773-336-2686. Leave comments on scifipartyline.com. Tweet us at scifipartyline, and we will see you at the party next time. Bye.
Peter? Peter. Peter? Please, Peter. For once in my life, I have someone who needs me. Someone I've needed so long. For once, unafraid, I can go where life leads me, and somehow I know I'll be strong. For once in my life, I won't let sorrow hurt me, not like it's hurt me before. For once, I have something I know won't desert me. I'm not alone anymore.
Why don't you give people time to get used to them? If they are feeling, if they have an honest feeling that they're not into it right now and they are still watching, you know?
Again, I feel like people are completely
rewriting history. Wow, Carl just hung up.
Oh, did he?